From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on March 18th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. This episode features a look at the Senate's recently passed judicial reform bill. We get an update on a controversial Senate bill that would restrict how the state could respond to a future public health emergency. House Speaker Merle Smith updates us on what the priorities are for his chamber with 8 weeks left in the session. And we learn more about his utility legislation from the Russ McKinney.
Wow.
I also bring you part of my exit interview with retiring SCDOT Secretary Christy Hall.
So fun!
The Lead loves hearing from everybody. That's why we have a voicemail box set up at 803-563-7169. You call that number on your phone, you listen to the little greeting, and you leave us a message between 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. If it's really good, you can do that. Let us know. But just do as I say. Call that number, 803-563-7169, and your voice will be on this podcast for eternity. Let us know what you're up to. Spring is here.
Yes.
Well, folks, we didn't have any South Carolinians on the Sunday shows this week.
What?
Can you believe that?
No.
I know. Complete shocker. So what we're going to do instead, we're going to go ahead and jump into the State House and recap a little bit what happened last week.
Oh!
Now, last Thursday, after hours of testimony and some closed-door negotiations, the state Senate passed its judicial reform bill. While it's not a major overhaul of how judges are screened and chosen in the state, proponents of the legislation say it's a big step forward toward improving the process. The biggest changes come to the Judicial Merit Selection Commission, which currently includes 5 House and 5 Senate appointees. 3 of those appointees from each chamber are members. The new Senate bill gives the governor 4 appointees now and reconfigures the other membership to give the House Speaker 4 appointments and 2 selections from both the Senate Judiciary Chairman and the Senate President. So 12 folks in total on the new JMSC. Those appointees would serve a single 4-year term but could be reappointed non-consecutively. This was seen as a way to limit any conflict with lawyer legislators on the commission who appear before a judge who was selected on a 6-year term basis. Chairman Luke Rankin called the compromise the best effort and that this will improve the process, which under the bill would require a judicial candidate to win not just a majority of the 170 members of the General Assembly, but rather the majority of both House and Senate members. Remember, we're one of 2 states where lawmakers elect judges in the state, not the voters, us in Virginia. Now, right now, all a candidate would need to do, technically, would be to secure a majority of the 124 House members and blow off the 46 Senate members. But this bill equalizes that, though it may raise some constitutional concerns. Now, if there are several candidates on the first ballot and no one receives the majority, then the top 3 vote-getters go to a second round. If the vote remains deadlocked, lawmakers will revisit the election a week later. Here's Chairman Rankin.
We have a system that is intended to vet the candidates as thoroughly as we know how. We want the public to be aware of this process. We want the General Assembly to be aware of this process. You all to be aware of this process. It is open. We're going to make it more open. You will now be able to see it live streamed. But we have confidence in our judiciary. And so to the degree that we make a better mousetrap here, to instill more confidence in our judiciary and more acutely the process by which these men and women who are honored to take the job, to get the black robe, how they got there. And so that is the intent of this bill.
The bipartisan bill was passed by a 41-0 vote, but not before Williamsburg Democrat Ronnie Saab, a lawyer, spoke on the bill. Saab, who has previously served on the JMSC, said that the reforms in the bill, while good, don't change the realities of the face of the judiciary currently, specifically the all-male, soon-to-be all-white-male state Supreme Court.
I believe that when there is an absence of diversity on a judiciary, I believe that issue in and of itself could erode public confidence. So I think when you don't have any women on the Supreme Court, and you're the only state in the United States that doesn't have one, I think it forces persons to take a look at whether or not our judiciary is reflective and whether or not it's fair to everybody. I think the makeup matters. I think when persons of color are not on our judiciary, I think that you have a substantial part of our population that looks at that, and I believe that can erode public confidence. I also believe that when the chamber, the Senate and the House, if we were to adopt a stringent test, like whether or not somebody is strong Republican, whether or not somebody is strong Democrat, I think that erodes public confidence in our system.
There is no litmus test or ideological test given to judicial candidates before the JMSC, currently or in this bill. The panel screens them, looks at their records and responses to the legal questions it asks in its questionnaire as a way of certifying candidates and finding out if they are or not qualified before they're voted upon by the legislature. The bill now heads to the House with just 8 weeks until sine die, the last day of session. Staying in the Senate, a Medical Affairs subcommittee held a hearing on S-975, the so-called Medical Freedom Act that would outlaw the state's public health office from obtaining and distributing novel vaccines during a time of a public health emergency until the vaccines are fully approved, not just under an emergency use authorization, by the Food and Drug Administration. DHEC Director Dr. Edward Simmer, who stabilized the agency after it went through two directors at the start of the COVID pandemic in 2020 and is now leading it through its transformation into the Department of Public Health and Department of Environmental Services, testified at that hearing. On a hot mic, Subcommittee Chairman Shane Martin can be heard saying this after Dr. Simmer, who wears a mask, introduces himself to the subcommittee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Dr. Edward Simmer, Director of the Department of Health and Environmental Control for South Carolina.
A little awkward there, a little anti-mask hate, but Simmer opened his remarks walking the subcommittee through a letter that he sent the governor's office warning Governor Henry McMaster of how S-975 would severely limit the state's ability to respond to another public health emergency. Simmer noted that DHEC has never quarantined or isolated anyone or mandated any vaccines. Anderson Senator Richard Cash questioned the approach by health facilities to limit visits during COVID, something Simmer disagreed with and had changed later during the response.
You should have been allowed to stay with your spouse. Absolutely. I think, you know, we saw the pictures of people seeing nursing home patients through a window. They should have been allowed in. And in fact, here in South Carolina, our agency, working with the governor and his office, moved to tell nursing homes they had to let people in because we had nursing homes that didn't want to do it. And we finally basically ordered them that they had to, because we felt that personal contact with loved ones, especially for a patient in a nursing home, but certainly in a hospital too, is invaluable. And, you know, where that didn't happen, that was a mistake. And that's a lesson learned from COVID that I will do everything I can do to make sure it does not happen again. So I agree with you, Senator. I think there should be that access. But I would also note that, so far as I know, and certainly not due to COVID, because we isolated no one and quarantined no one due to COVID, so those people were not under a quarantine or an isolation order. That was a facility decision. I would say I think those facilities made the wrong decision. Now, I understand in the stress of the time, they made the decisions based on what they thought was the best information they had. I'm not going to sit here and disparage them. But I think that was a mistake. And you know, I don't believe that reinstating the language in two here would prevent exactly what would prevent us from ensuring that patients in a hospital, that patients in a nursing home were able to get the visitation, because we know how important that is for their emotional well-being and probably their family members' emotional well-being too. So I completely agree with you, Senator. I don't think that changing this back would prevent exactly what you're asking us to do. And certainly, I will pledge to you that I will use all powers within my authority to make sure that does not happen again.
The bill, as originally written, would also remove natural disasters as a qualifying health condition for a public health emergency. The bill would also limit the governor's ability to declare a health emergency due to widespread illness. So you're starting to understand why the governor is not a big fan of this bill, since it limits so much of his power in these situations. The bill would also limit the number of days a person with a disease could be isolated for, even if they are still infectious. The bill heads to the full Senate Medical Affairs Committee. We'll be right back. In our last episode, we talked about the $13.2 billion state budget plan that the House passed. The Senate Finance Committee is working on its version now. So what's left to do in the House as we march toward that second Thursday in May? Well, a lot. In fact, I asked House Speaker Merle Smith that question last Wednesday when he spoke with reporters.
I think the next issue that you're going to see us address is the energy bill. That's a big item for us, not only for us, but for the future of South Carolina. I think we need to recognize that we're in dangerously close to running out of being able to serve power needs of South Carolina, both from an industrial standpoint and from a residential standpoint. So you'll see a vigorous debate on that, and that will come up in full committee next week, and then we will be debating that on the floor shortly thereafter. So that's the next big issue that I see that we'll be tackling.
Do you think there'll be enough time for the Senate to pick it up and finish it this year?
I hope so. I think it was something that we've all recognized, the governor, the Senate, and the House, that this is a critical issue to the future of South Carolina. And we've been working with Senator Davis and President Alexander and Chairman Rankin over there while this process is going. So I hope that we will be able to get it over there to them in a few weeks and that they will be able to take that issue up. And I think it's a priority of theirs, but I'll let them speak to that.
The Russ McKinney earlier this month looked at that utility legislation and has this report.
A bill that its backers hope will ensure South Carolina residents and businesses have a reliable supply of gas and electricity in the future is moving through the state legislature. Dramatic population and industrial growth, coupled with the lack of natural gas capacity that's available to the state, has prompted lawmakers to develop a wide-ranging bill known as the 10-Year Energy Transformation Act. House Speaker Merle Smith says the state is at a crisis point when it comes to having a reliable supply of energy.
We're a growing state with a growing economy, and we're dangerously close to running out of ability to service the needs of our population and our economic development projects here in South Carolina if we don't make a change.
That change Smith and others want to make includes clear direction to state regulators and utility executives for the utilities to increase their electric generating capacity. The bill also urges them to take a renewed look at nuclear as a future power source. And it would restructure the state Public Service Commission to include streamlining the permitting process so utilities can generate new power faster. Duke Energy recently reported growth in its service area is now 8 times what it projected 2 years ago. To meet demand, the utilities are proposing to increase their use of natural gas plants, as well as more solar and battery storage sources. The increase in the demand for power comes at the same time utilities are closing old coal plants. Jeff Penland of Santee Cooper recently told a House subcommittee the unprecedented growth the state is seeing is posing problems.
You know, we're facing a twofold problem in South Carolina and in the Southeast. We are having to replace older generation with new generation, and we're having to build new generation to meet the growth we're seeing in this state, along with a need to have the available capacity for economic development.
An example of the economic development challenge state leaders are facing is Century Aluminum in Berkeley County. It's one of the largest users of electricity in the state. Century's Matt Abood says the company now operates at 75% capacity and would like to start a fourth smelter, which would create hundreds of additional jobs.
We are a very, very large consumer of power. So, of course, in order for us to feel comfortable to restart, we have to know that that power is available. The consistency and availability of power is key for us.
Abood says Century is working with its supplier, Santee Cooper, to meet its energy needs. The proposed bill specifically blesses Dominion Energy and Santee Cooper's hopes to partner in a new large combined gas cycle plant in Colleton County. It encourages Duke to evaluate the need for more gas generation in its service areas and to evaluate possibly adding a second powerhouse at its Bad Creek Pump Storage Facility in Oconee County. The bill has the support of utilities, but conservation groups are warning if enacted, the new law could give a green light to utility leaders to undertake big, expensive projects like new natural gas plants and not give enough consideration to cleaner and cheaper energy alternatives. They also liken the proposed bill to the infamous Baseload Review Act of 2007. It allowed too little oversight of the failed V.C. Summer nuclear project in 2017. John Brooker is with the League of Conservation Voters.
We've been here before. Utilities are selling a joint gas mega project as a silver bullet to our energy problems. But it is not. This same song was sung in proposals for V.C. Summer, the failed V.C. Summer plant that lost $9 billion of ratepayer funds.
The legislature repealed the Baseload Review Act following the V.C. Summer debacle.
Thanks, Russ.
We love you.
You can find that story more on SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And I want to share a bit of my interview from this week in South Carolina with outgoing Department of Transportation Secretary Christy Hull.
Mm-hmm.
The engineer and DOT lifer helped stabilize the sprawling agency, rebuild trust, and increase a major revenue stream to fund much-needed transportation infrastructure improvements across the state. I asked her about her accomplishments and what more needs to be done at the agency.
Kind of dating back to 2011, when we had our cash issue, there was really no strategic vision for the agency, and we really, honestly, we were doing whatever we did the year before and maybe just a little bit more, with no clear understanding as to why we were spending a certain amount of money for paving versus bridges versus interstate projects or even safety. It was really no good plan in place. You know, we had three secretaries in less than 2 years come in, and, you know, when you have turnover at the top, it does affect the organization. You know, a big organization like DOT tends to really want to run itself. It's like a big machine, a lot of good, talented people, but process-driven and really was on cruise control.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I took the helm, it was one of the very first questions I asked as secretary is, how much are we spending on paving across the state in our annual program? And I went to three different people, and I received three very different answers.
Mm-hmm.
Which I knew immediately we had an issue because there was no alignment to what we were trying to do and what the return on investment was. So I immediately began to set upon a path to figure out what we were doing, what that return on that investment would be, and really carve apart our financial ask that we had been making to the legislature year over year of a funding gap, mm-hmm. really understand what was in those numbers and, you know, really carve that up and come up with what we felt like was realistic and achievable.
And so at this point, though, would you call that, when you look at that fight that you helped lead, that you helped win, that obviously was a big morale boost for the agency, too, to see that you were willing to fight, willing to put your reputation on line, get the agency where it needed to be, get that money in there to fix things. Because you guys were always the butt of the joke in terms of people saying, oh, the roads are always horrible. They're always horrible. Even when we have more money coming in, people are still complaining about the roads because it is taking a long time to get them back to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that getting that extra money to the agency was your biggest accomplishment in your career?
It certainly was one of the biggest ones for sure. You know, my entire career up to that point had been the agency talking about how broke it was and how we needed all these additional resources well before I came back to headquarters in 2011. You know, the mantra was we needed more funding to do more road work. And while there's certainly no argument that the need was always there, I would agree with the folks that have said that we weren't ready for an increase prior to formulating this plan, because honestly, as I said, when I asked the question of how much paving are we doing across the state, and I got three very different answers, I think that's indicative of an organization that really at that time had no strategic plan, no vision, and really couldn't articulate what the return on those taxpayer dollars was going to be. So
yeah.
I think really adopting and embracing that performance management approach, which is really what it is probably the biggest legacy that I will leave with the agency.
Hurricane Florence, I mean, we had, you know, the Grand Strand was about to get cut off, and you had some emergency decisions to be made, some technology that hadn't really ever been deployed, you know, those aqua dams that were going up. Do you have any memories from those times? I think you were actually in the field for a good bit of that, too.
Yes, I mean, it was very fluid, not to overuse that kind of term with a hurricane or a flood. But, yeah, I mean, we had analytics that were telling us that we should expect that a good portion of Horry County was going to be completely cut off from the rest of the state. And so we were facing a potential situation of, you know, several hundred thousand citizens mm-hmm. isolated away from the rest of the state. And so there were all kinds of discussions as to how are we going to maintain a lifeline to that community, whether we were going to institute a air operation with cargo jets and helicopters or pontoon bridges. I mean, you could just imagine all the planning that can go into something like that. But we eventually settled on the best approach was to identify one route, one land route, and throw everything that we can at it to try to keep it open. And so that, when we determined that that's what we were going to do, then it became, how do we actually do that, given the amount of flooding that we were anticipating? So we reached out to a lot of different people, a lot of our partners at EMD, and came back with the HESCO sand-filled barriers with a liner on top of them, as well as the aquadam. Neither one of those we'd ever used in the state, but had heard of some other areas that had used them with success. So we threw everything at it, mobilized the National Guard to help us with it. We also secured those aquadams, actually, out of Texas and California. We had a trucking company that we engaged and had them literally drive all day and all night with rotating drivers to get that material here, to get it in place.
So, Secretary, when you talk about bridges specifically, I know there's been a big push from the governor to give you all about an extra, $500 million or so to improve bridges just because of the state of conditions that they're facing. Tell us about the need for this money. I think the House has put about $200 million in their budget, which is going through the State House this week. And the Senate still has to work on the budget, but what's the need there for the bridges? What's the concern? What's happening there?
So we spend roughly about $200 million a year on bridges. And while we have seen pretty good return on that investment so far, we've replaced roughly about 330 bridges so far in the 10-year plan. It kind of goes back to that lesson that I talked about earlier, looking around the corner and anticipating what's ahead. And so when I look ahead on our bridge inventory, I can see that we have a significant number of bridges that are aging out, that are about to exceed their life expectancy, and will need either replacement or significant repair. So really this investment that we're asking for is designed to address an emerging issue that we're having here in the state, but really kind of intercept the major problem before it becomes a major problem.
You can find that entire interview on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. It's where all of our great content, including the lead, lives. And a big shout out to the incoming SCDOT Secretary Justin Powell, who is a listener of this podcast, folks.
Wow.
That's right. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're always glad that you're here. Every time that you're here, we're glad that you're here.
Right, you've always been the caretaker.
In the wind down section, Andy Shire, yes. Producer of the lead podcast.
Yes. Oh, that's a Shining reference. We love the Shining here.
AT, you're not in studio with me.
No.
Studio.
I feel a lot better.
That's great.
I do.
That's fantastic.
I'm still testing a hard positive, but I have fewer symptoms. But, oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm. Well, that test was dying to turn positive the first time, so I'm sure you're just
the second time, almost just as fast. But anyway, I really wanted to go to St. Pat's and Five Points this weekend. Didn't work out because I was testing so positive. But I am feeling a lot better. This is more of a precautionary. There's so many people in radio because it is a pledge drive right now, people. If you're listening, you should be pledging, okay? So I'm just, we're being safe.
That's good. Better to be safe than sorry is what I've read.
I remember that court case, safe v. sorry.
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. Huge landmark decision for OSHA.
Landmark decision. Yeah.
Safe v.
Really
sorry.
Good.
Well,
safe
and sorry. I don't want to tell you, but I was on the sorry side. And we.
I was safe. I was on the safe side.
I have family that was on the sorry side. It's really
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, yeah, brother versus brother. Anyway, we have a call. Are you ready for the calls? Old friend, stalwart of the show. Oh, are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, for a stalwart, I'm ready. Yeah. Hey, here we go.
Come again, a stalwart. Yes.
Hey, guys. Roman here, calling quickly to say that you should totally not get rid of that fridge, AT. That fridge probably has R12 refrigerant in it, which they don't make no more, and that's a really good refrigerant. And if you're going to move it, then while you have it on the back of the truck, before you put it in to your house, you should take a air compressor or something and try to blow out the coils in the back around the compressor underneath it, because it won't be ever be easier to do it than when it's up on that back of the truck. And that might solve some of the knocking sound you're hearing. If you're wondering how I know what the heck I'm talking about, this voicemail is brought to you by Horry Georgetown Tech Community College, which is basically the reason why I was able to survive the recession. And a great place to learn how to do air conditioning, HVAC. Shout out to my teachers, Jerry Britt and Ron Watkins. And as Professor Watkins would say, don't get rid of it. Leave that jewel alone.
Teacher Roman, thank you for calling. Thank you for educating us there. We appreciate that. yeah, I don't want AT to throw it away, because I'm sure that all the CFCs would just get released into the atmosphere and would just grow the ozone hole. Just a little bit more from AT.
Yeah, I was talking about probably just throwing it into the river.
Yeah, that's probably the safest way to dispose of it.
Dad, get it down here. Let's break open that compressor, pour its contents into the Congaree.
Yes, I think the Congaree River Keeper, who might listen to this show, could be like, yes, that's what we endorse. That's what we want here.
That's what they're asking for. Anyway, Roman, we are asking for these calls, and we thank you so much for calling in. You're always the best. And thank you for backing up the fridge thing. I talked to my dad this morning.
Oh, boy.
I said, an informed citizen has called into the podcast and has backed me up and says, you need to save that fridge. And I don't know if it's just a spite thing, but my dad is still refusing and says, no, I'm throwing out the fridge.
I said, keep the fridge. How is that not carry any weight in this house?
I don't know. I was like, Dad, he has a podcast.
Dad. Papa, listen.
It's not just, he has a podcast and it's a stalwart, Dad, okay?
Also, the lead does not support disposing of any waste in any public waterway, of course. We would never endorse that. But
Gavin has never thrown anything out. He's a hoarder. His whole house is filled with stuff.
It's full of memories, not stuff.
Everything is my friend. I wouldn't throw a friend out, you know? So
stop talking. I wish I'm all like less is more these days. I don't need any more stuff. How much more stuff do I need?
Very Scandinavian of you.
Oh yes.
Very sparse, stern. Gavin is trying to limit the amount of friends he has. Oh, everything yeah.
I'm editing, I'm culling, everything has just been reduced.
Gavin is Marie Kondoing his life. Nothing brings him joy. Therefore, he has nothing.
nothing, unfortunately, is bringing me joy right now. So,
well, you got to go. You got to go to 5 points. What? You got to go to St. Patrick's Day. Didn't you have a good time at St. Patrick's
Day? I did.
Day?
It was wonderful outside. It was beautiful. I love going
to
St. Pat's.
It was so nice out.
I love going to St. Pat's because it is literally the survival of the fittest, right? Like, you have to be there. Like, you have to be ready for it. Like, you are wandering around, somewhat inebriated, trying to find friends, trying to find lost items, trying to find bathrooms. And I will say the Ruby Slipper, that new brunch spot that opened down there in Five
Rubies.
Points, they had a great little base of operation. No line for the bathroom, none of that stuff. So it was great to be there. I actually saw one of my state reps there that I always see every St. Pat's.
The first time I ever went to the Five Points St. Patrick's Day is like a fever dream now that I remember
always.
Back on it. Because I live up the street from Five Points, and so we were walking down the hill in, and I see just kids stumbling up like the Walking Dead. You know what I mean? And I saw a kid just trip and fall and smash his face on a curb.
Brutal.
And get up and feel nothing. And then Caitlin and I were just like, oh, okay. And as we get to the gate, they're gurneying a girl out into an ambulance. We were like, oh, okay, it's really happening in there. And then the person to check us in, they wanted to check Caitlin's bag. Well, the bag checker had two broken hands with sticks in the casts. And it was rummaging.
You're like, where are we going, babe?
Yes. And then we get in, and I just see a girl get so mad, she smashed her phone on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And all of this was within, I don't know, 4.5 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, babe, I think we moved to a cool place.
Yes. Once every year, we go off the rails in Five Points. We give Savannah a run for its money for sure. I want to go to Savannah for St. Pat's. I hear really great things. But you do St. Pat's in Columbia. You really, like, I go around noon, 1, and you stay maybe for a couple hours because it starts to really, you start to spiral when down ends, a little bit. When everyone it else ends, is starting to like spiral yeah. down. Everyone's hot. They're like getting
when
lost.
They realize the music that they're listening to, where it's a one-hit wonder from 2001, like it's Sister Hazel or the Spin Doctors.
Which I'd be okay with the Spin Doctors. I didn't see Sister Hazel, but I think I've seen them before. But yeah, or Dashboard Confessionals or whatever.
Like, I just don't understand why they always pick a band with two songs. You know what I mean? Like, how are they going to sustain a 45-minute set? Mm. Here's another song nobody knows, and everyone's like, just play the ones that we like. Yeah. And they're like,
That's not exclusive to 5.8 Pats. That's like, you know, Pride is also like that, too, where you get like one. But sometimes you get bigger acts. I had Lisa that one year. That was pretty good. But yeah, it's always difficult, I think, to get people to these markets, too, and keep it affordable. I'm just there to support St. Pat's and as a hyper local celebrity, just, you know, put out the vibe. I know I have my ETV hat on. I'm like, oh, I really have to behave. Like, I'm like repping the agency right now.
I've been there and I've heard the whispers. Where's Gavin? Where's Gavin Jackson? Where is she?
No, but I almost got, speaking of like, I'm thinking back, I didn't get into a fight, but like, I was very like excited. It's like a high holy day for me, but we're in line.
Yeah.
Getting the ID check. And I didn't. This person didn't cut in front of me, but they cut in front of the people behind us. And I was like, "You're just gonna do that?" Like the line was moving. Like it was a solid 3 minutes. Like no big deal.
Yeah,
you're just getting a wristband.
It's nice, easy to get in.
And I'm like, "You're really gonna cut? Like who does that?"
Yeah. It's just like, what sort of schedule are you on?
And then the guy kept saying, "He's like, is this gonna be into a scuffle?" I'm like, "I'm not talking about getting into a scuffle, but I'm just like, what are you doing?"
No.
Like,
that guy is ready for the scuffle. Correct. He came
just
for the
like
scuffles.
The guy that was giving me a hard time about my parking job in D.C. Like these people, they come to me with the anger in their hearts already.
Well, Gavin, you're an empath. We all know that.
and I'm the linchpin that they're just using to justify. Yeah, but I was like, if we could all wait in line here. It's a great day. Everyone's having fun. Chill out. Here's Gavin's word of advice for the year.
Hit him
chill
with
out,
it
guys.
Right here. Hey,
chill out.
Enough, okay?
Cool
enough.
Your jets. Calm down.
We're not in New Jersey. We're in South Carolina. Yeah. Everybody calm down. We all have allergies very bad, okay?
Oh, God, we're all covered in pollen. Like, we just got dusted in pollen. And then on St. Pat's itself, I hung out with my good friends, Neil and Louise. Hadn't seen them since they got married.
Love them.
Haven't seen them since they got married on New Year's Eve. So, because I'm reconnecting with everyone since I've been on the campaign trail, right? So it's Gavin's tour.
You're starting from square one, rebuilding your life.
You know, actually having weekends when I can actually go out.
I like that this is the opposite side of the coin from the start of the wind down where you purged and now you're binging these people. You're filling your life back up.
Building back. But we went to Beer Keller, also here in Columbia. Great
love
spot.
Love Beer Keller. Scott, great owner, great brewer. Love those guys.
Yeah, and so we were just hanging out there and, you know, celebrating a German beer garden, St. Patrick's Day. It's fine. We're still wearing
amazing.
The green. It's all relative to me and my background. But you're just sitting out there, and you start looking at your phone, and it's just getting dusted with pollen left and right. Even with the breeze, and we're just like, okay, like just breathe it in, baby.
Yeah, wear your mask to keep the pollen out of your mouth and nuts. You
should put like a coaster over my beard to keep the pollen out of that too. But wonderful weekend, always great showing off in Columbia, all the good things that we have going on for us. Take that, Greenville and Charleston.
Anyway, Gavin, be the conduit that closes this show. You are an empath, okay?
I feel that everyone we're coming to that. A close, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. Thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. We love all of our municipalities and big cities and small cities alike in South Carolina. Don't call and gripe about that, folks. I've lived around the state. We love it all here. It's a great state. You can do your part by giving us a shout like Roman did at 803-563-7169. We love hearing from you guys. Tell us about your St. Patrick's Day. Spring is springing. Let us know what you got going on. If you're doing some spring cleaning, what's on the agenda for you? 803-563-7169. If you don't want to leave us a voicemail, hit us up on Apple Podcasts. We love a review. And you can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Like, I think you can pull that color off, but I don't think it's a unique color.
Flash.
Flash.
That'd be a good ending.
I guess I kind of walked into that one, didn't I?